Siren Radio.
You know, so much excitement in the studio. I mean, Ben, you've already said that Malcolm's daughter was at the BAFTAs. She should have won one.
I saw her. I've been interviewed. Yeah. I'm sure Malcolm caught her for like 5 seconds. I think she was on there.
Did you catch that, Malcolm? A bit of Eleanor on the BAFTAs?
I did, actually. Yeah, there was a little bit on the red carpet, Alex. And then she did, well, there were a few shots of her sitting with her brother Ross in the audience, which I spotted, but nobody else would have done because I'm biased. And then there was a tiny bit at the end of the Oscars where she was presenting...
BAFTAs. We haven't had the Oscars yet, Malcolm. It's the BAFTAs. Yeah. She does the Oscars next month.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, well, she's presenting with, I think it was the sound, or it might have been editing, or it might have been both. But it was a little bit at the end, so yeah, I didn't catch it. Yeah.
Of course, the unanswered question, which is going to be echoed across the airwaves tomorrow as well as we build up to filled in as marrying Lily Holloman, is why, oh why, oh why, oh why, haven't the Academy of Motion Pictures and Sciences in the United States of America been in touch with Malcolm Tomlinson to host the Oscars? Because they haven't got a host. You know, or indeed Phil Lynn. They've not got a host. It could be the first time they have an unhosted ceremony since 1979, and that ended in calamitous tragedy. We had Lily Tomlin being embarrassed by the whole thing. We had Snow White. It was a disaster.
Yeah, well, they've already shot themselves in the foot this year, actually. Like, so I don't know if you've seen the news today, but they've decided that four categories of Oscar are going to be presented during the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
What?
Exactly.
That defeats the object of it, though, doesn't it?
Or to our American cousins, that's south of Canada. Sorry, Abigail, just addressing that. Say what?
Exactly. I mean, you couldn't make it up, could you?
Anyway, what delights for Leonis we'll have to talk about tomorrow. Would you like to formally welcome the team, Malcolm? Because we've got Abigail, of course, obviously from Canada, Toronto. We'll be building a jingle just for her. In fact, we already started work on that. Currently, she's showing us photographs of her hand, which she broke, of course, while skiing earlier in the year. Which is going. I mean, Eva, what are your thoughts on? I mean, do you think they're Academy Award-winning pictures of the hand?
There could be.
Could be documentary.
There's not really a way that we can show them at the moment. But
think about it. Think of a hand. Think of a swollen hand.
It's quite yellow.
Think of a spray tanned hand. That's for the line forward.
It's quite yellow.
Yellow. Mm. And Bethany, of course, would you also agree these could be Academy Award winning?
Oh, yeah,
The Hand of Abigail.
They're beautiful.
That surely gives you some meat to actually sort of develop, even for vegetarian vegan purposes, Malcolm, because I know you stick with those. Before we even talk about horse racing and various other bits and pieces, whom would you like to chat to first? Abigail, Eva, Ben or Bethany?
I want to ask Abigail about the skiing. How on earth did you manage to break your... Were you skiing or boarding, Abigail?
I was skiing. And I was going down a black diamond hill, but what the issue was there was a huge ditch running across the hill, so my ski tips caught the opposite side of the ditch, and then I was just kind of flung through the air down the hill.
Flung through the air, Malcolm.
Were you on-piste or off-piste?
Sorry?
Were you on-piste?
It's not a drinking question.
So were you on an actual ski thing, or was it off track?
That's a good question.
Bless her. You see, that's why we love the Canadians.
So it was on a run. Yeah, it must be. If it's on a run, it's on piste.
It was a run, but I'm not sure if it was open. That's the question.
I'm thinking, Ben, if she's on piste and someone's dug a ditch across the middle of it, they need to have a word with someone.
Mm-hmm. Probably. I mean, maybe that's how Canadians work. Who knows?
I thought my admiration for your country could not get any higher after William Shatner. But it has, quite simply, it has, Abigail, and you're responsible for that. Aww. Fiona Moore, she's kept the Canadian flag. Shane Rimmer, of course, also keeps the Canadian flag flying, but you've just taken it a whole age way forward. Horse racing, Malcolm. Let's do a quick straw poll in the studio. Were you concerned about equine flu, Ben?
Slightly, actually, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Eva?
A little bit, yes.
A little bit. Equine flu?
I don't think so.
No, that's
it's not a popular sport in Canada, is it?
We're getting less and less.
And Bethany, equine flu.
Yeah, interesting.
Worrying and interesting.
I really like medical things. I find them interesting, but they should be worried more so, I suppose.
I don't know where she's going with respect to that one, Malcolm, but from your own point of view, did you think actually it could be the beginning of the end of equine racing in the British Isles?
Well, it's very... was very concerning just for a few days, actually, Alex, because a similar outbreak had happened in Australia in 2007, and they actually stopped racing for 6 months over there. But the big difference here was all the horses over here had been inoculated against equine flu, whereas they hadn't in Australia. Now, the ones who's got it over here had been inoculated, but apparently the actual serum that they inject the horses with has managed to do the bulk of its job. So basically, the symptoms are not anywhere near as bad as they could have been. Now, having said that, there's only been, I think, 8 or 9 cases confirmed, and they were restricted to 2 separate yards. But and in the end, I think the BHA, the governing body, did the right thing. You know, they had to sort of get on top of the problem. And then once they realized that it wasn't as serious as they thought it was going to be, and in fact, they're going to end up with a database now of all the thoroughbreds in the country and find out which ones have got runny noses. So it's basically like, you know, you and I having a cold and not going to work. Well, obviously you would go to work, Alex, because nothing stops you going to work. But, you know, the rest of us, if we've got a runny nose, we'll stay at home. And basically, you know, that's what's happening and that's what's always happened. So whilst I understand that they had to be careful, I think it might have been a slight overreaction, to be honest with you. And a couple of days ago, the Irish governing body said that all British horses were welcome to run in Ireland. And once that statement had been made, I think the BHA just had to say, well, look, you know, we're on top of the situation and we're going to let racing go ahead again. But yeah, it was very concerning because it obviously costs the industry a huge amount of money. And I think the 6 days that the industry didn't race, I think it cost the industry about £8 million. So, you know,
plus, of course,
two commentary fees for me, you know.
Plus, of course, the fear that, as he chokes on his own words, yeah, that Cheltenham might not go ahead.
Yeah, that was the big worry, because obviously that's the multi-million pound festival for jumps racing and employs an awful lot of people and is extremely important to the area down in Gloucestershire as well. So, you know, that was a massive concern that, you know, touch wood, it seems to have avoided the danger now. So all systems go, I think.
Exactly. So all will be well with the world. Eva, any questions you'd like to put to Malcolm about horse racing commentary, having an ace daughter and an ace son, of course, Ross, and, of course, Eleanor, or indeed, you know, his son's fondness for Tallulah Randall, who's actually just sent an email to me saying huge, huge, huge love and 4Xs. Nice, Tallulah Randall. That's her. She'll be on the show soon. You don't have to obviously say that, but just by the way. Eva.
Malcolm, how did you really get into horse racing commentating? Oh, that rhymes. How did you get into commentating?
You know, Eva, it was a complete fluke, and I'll cut it very short, but I was doing a pantomime way back in the day in the 80s with a guy called John Noakes, who you won't know, but plenty of the listeners will, and Alex certainly will. He was a presenter on a show called Blue Peter, and I was doing a pantomime down in London, and his agent asked me at the end of the 80s, way before the internet, if I wanted to do some voice work for a company in the city, and it was basically recording weather forecasts onto a computer for people to phone up and listen to on prime rate numbers, and it cost you something like 60p a minute to access this information. And I noticed next to this weather studio where I was working, there was a racing studio, and I went in and started chatting to somebody who turned out to be the boss of the racing studio. And as I'd been interested in racing all my life, I knew quite a lot about him. He asked me who I was, and I said, I'm an actor, I'm doing some work next door. And he said, well, come and do some work for us. And through that, it was sort of like providing racing commentaries down the phone. And through that, I met lots of commentators, and they said, oh, you should be out on the race course commentating. And it all took off from there, and I started working for Sky and ITV, and then it just went from there.
The legend continues, and it's the BBC's own idiocy that they don't employ you regularly with respect to Cheltenham and indeed the notion of the Grand National Office.
So it's a, well, frankly, a bit of a fallout with the BBC.
Yeah, it's their loss. It's their loss, Malcolm. At the end of the day, it's completely their loss.
They wanted me to be in two places at once, so it's supposed to be doing an episode of Doctors and commentating for them at Aintree at the same time.
And what channel is Doctors on, I ask you?
Well, exactly. So the BBC TV fell out with BBC Radio, and I sort of got stuck in the middle.
As many our equine friends would say.
Indeed.
Well, you might have occasional horse listeners who are there. Let's move on.
What is this radio, honestly?
Well, it takes it into a whole range of things.
Noises.
Just noises.
I thought you were going to so the whole version of old MacDonald had a farm there for a minute.
Only when you come to the studio. Malcolm, when will you be returning to the studio, and when can we see you again in Lincoln?
You'll have to invite me, Alex, and I'll more than happily come down and have a day with you down there.
Right, yeah. We Trevor Swinburne, footballer, played in goal for Carlisle and Sunderland Leeds. Fancy meeting him? Sorry, I know that's not the most...
Swinburne, but... Yeah.
Exactly. Swinburne.
Well, it's not quite as tempting as meeting the lady from Legson Cove.
The no-no, is it?
No. That was Taryn Kay. Oh. Malcolm has worked with Taryn Kay because we've worked together the same murder mystery setup before.
Oh, interesting.
That was Rosie Langhorne. Time is getting on. We need to go over to Berlin. Last two questions for Malcolm, please. Abigail.
Have you had a reasonably nice telephonic link with us today?
I have, thank you, Abigail.
Lovely, and we'll be Whoa, sorry. I was just going to ask, will we be hearing from you again?
You certainly will.
Yay!
Dream in the distance, a scream advanced, entranced, taking only a chance. In and out my mind goes.
Sind Sie allein in Berlin, Herr Coles? Sind Sie allein in Berlin?
I never knew your German was so wonderful.
Well, every so often I like to feel as though our Teutonic cousins need to be recognised, just as our equine folk do, so I'll occasionally just slip in the occasional was man nicht üblich macht man starker of words to actually appreciate the joy and happiness. Not that I'm advocating for an Aryan siren super race, because obviously that's already been set for another line entirely. Whereabouts in Berlin are you? And welcome to the Midweek Drive, William.
We are just by the wall, and just by the Wall Museum. I am walled out today.
Oh. Well, in the studio, Eva is with us.
Hello.
You can move the microphone close to yourself, Eva, rather than leaning forward. So if you move that microphone, take hold of that microphone. I've taken it down. Ease it to yourself. All be likewise, Abigail, you can also take hold of that microphone and move it close to yourself as well whilst we're there. So a bit of radio technique, just as Ben's done there. You see, there we are. There's exhibit A from that point of view. Marvellous. So we have Abigail, Eva, Bethany and Ben.
Excellent.
Bethany making the traditional Bethany Gulliver Creek there, because it's what she does. It's all right. It's her bones. She's 21 in a few days' time. Who knows what happens at that point in March. How is this affecting your training for Engadine and the world's greatest ski marathon, though, Bill?
Today I've done a lot of walking around Berlin, but it's not roller skiing. Yes, you're right. But you know, the training is, I'm versatile about the training. So it's slightly on hold for 3 days.
Well, we do have literary editor for Starburst magazine, Ed Fortune. In fact, it's a Starburst-themed show, Starburst and SFX, because Richard Edwards is joining us midway through the next hour. And then Robin Pierce sums up the programme. But, Ben, have you got questions on
just
Berlin?
It's sci-fi, isn't it? Yeah, Berlin.
No, Berlin isn't sci-fi.
This show is sci-fi, isn't it? It's a sci-fi show.
Horse racing is not necessarily science fiction.
Well, yeah, but for the remainder of the show is...
Jeffrey Van Dyke making his programme debut with...
I'm sure there'll be some sort of sci-fi link in there. I'm sure we can get something.
Who knows?
But anyway, yes, Berlin Wall. How are you finding Berlin, Bill? Bill Berlin? How is everything going there?
Bill in Berlin?
Exactly, that's a new show. We need Berlin to sort something Bill. Out. Exactly. Bill in Berlin. How is it going?
It's fantastic. It's my first trip to Berlin. And so we've been on a walking tour. And the best bit of the lot is you go, first of all, they take you to this huge... memorial to the Holocaust victims, which is about 4 acres, and it's pretty impressive. And these 2,000 blocks of concrete all in straight lines over about 4 acres, and so you see that, and then they walk you about 100 yards to this rather grubby car park, and you're wondering, what are we doing here? And there's no memorial there or anything at all. And this is where Hitler's bunker was, and this is where Hitler committed suicide and was burned. And it is now just this grubby car park.
So in many ways, you're saying in 500 or 600 years from now, Richard III will obviously be re-emerged from that point of view. No, let's not go there.
Awkward territory.
just a touch. I'm not going to get into Ein Volk, Ein Land, Ein Führer. It would be a different line. Arbeit macht frei. It doesn't really. Abigail, as a Canadian, have you managed to trek over to Berlin as yet? Is it on your list of things to do?
I have to say it's not on my list of things to do. I haven't been. I don't know why. I think I'm just a little frightened of Germany still.
Most people are, yeah.
Exactly. I don't know why. I just feel like it's very aggressive over there, and I'm a bit mean.
No, there's a lot of chocolate.
Chocolate.
And sausages.
Trying to address that, of course, Ben, you worked with a number of Germans in,
Bentley. Yeah, exactly. Other than from VW and Porsche.
Yeah, exactly, Bentley. Yeah.
Berlin, Munich, various places around the world.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier.
Yeah. I've learned a bit of German as well, living with them.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Remember to order your Glühwein and your Bratwurst.
What's been your general vibe, William? Because, I mean, Berlin is kind of... I mean, we've spoken with the Berlin Tourist Board a few times on the show, and understandably, they've been very positive about the whole sort of system, etc. You are our man on the spot there. Is there a good vibe in Berlin? Or is it a case of once you say you're from England, they say Brexit and such like?
No. It's a good vibe. It's very arty. It's been very arty since the war, and... Because when the war was up, they couldn't get many people to live in West Berlin. So they said that there were big tax breaks if you moved to West Berlin. And you didn't have to do national service. And so that's why all the artists and the bohemians came to Berlin. And it's still got that arty vibe today. And if you are in your 20s and you want to go clubbing, this is the place. It is I will not be doing anything of that, but I tell you,
Bill, 20s Bill, is life, place to come. Life is a cabaret, old son. Come to the cabaret.
Yes, okay, thanks.
Ich bin ein Kamera, as Christopher Isherwood once wrote, which of course led to the musical Cabaret. Lisa Minnelli. Well worth seeing, Eva. Honestly, if you haven't done a version of Cabaret, you must have done a cover version of Cabaret, surely.
Oh, of course. Of course.
I think she's lying to us.
Yeah, no, I haven't done
no,
it.
No, exactly. Truth is always, the truth will set you free. You know, you just don't go there.
Did you sense the sarcasm in that?
Well, it wasn't so much sarcasm as I was just sort of thinking, no, I don't think Eva would ever go down the Liza Minnelli route of bowler hat and Sally Bowles routines.
No,
not
I
yet,
haven't.
Anyway.
It's not been on my to-do list.
Abigail, on the other hand, probably will going to the site when you start doing your dancing routine. Yeah, it could be a whole range of things there. And Bethany, well, less the better anyway. Right. It's astounding. So what's the number one thing, apart from the clubbing, that you'd recommend you should see? Because the Brandenburg Gate was often flagged up for me as a must-see part of Berlin, or indeed the bits of the Berlin Wall that still stand. Anything that you'd say, Bill, would be a number one viewing point for citizens heading to Berlin?
The Jewish Memorial is outstanding. The Brandenburg Gate, every single day there's a new protest there. There's apparently more protests there than practically anywhere else in the world. And today it was primary school teachers wanting more money. So although we wanted to say, we were being mobbed with middle-class women predominantly.
Wow. Frau, basically. Frau.
Who left their primary schools.
In case you're interested, tomorrow morning, hopefully, we'll be speaking to Dr. Rainer Zittelmann, also from Berlin, so you see you're pioneering us here from that point of view. And we'll be talking about capitalism being the best system for delivering prosperity for all, but he views capitalism as increasingly under threat. He's one of Germany's leading sociologists, historians and entrepreneurs, and the author of 21 international best-selling books. He's been on the show beforehand. Hopefully we'll connect via Skype. That's tomorrow morning. So there you are.
Excellent.
Ben.
Yes,
put
Bill,
those last two questions.
I've got one more question, though.
Go then. Go.
Bill, just a quick one. Have you had a look at East Germany yet? Because apparently there's still a little bit, if you can tell...
They were unified a good few years ago.
But in terms of... but the east side of Berlin, sorry. That's what I meant to say, not Germany. Do you find there's still a bit of a difference between the... sort of the architecture and the types of buildings and the, you know,
brutalist.
The life as such?
Brutalist.
Brutalist. It is slightly more brutal and there is slightly... There's a hell of a lot of graffiti in Berlin, but there appears to be slightly more in East Berlin.
There you have it.
It's interesting.
In one checkpoint, Charlie.
So, final questions, obviously. William, have you enjoyed your 10 of Rod Lindquist today on the show?
I've loved it. I always do. Thank you for asking.
Wonderful. And will we expect you again next week?
Yes, please. Thank you so much.
Brilliant.
And for those people who thought we'd forgotten the Mayle brothers and that chap with the little moustache who used to play the keyboard organ in his own way, this could almost have been written for Berlin, Bill. So when you're looking for the literary editor of Starburst magazine, you know that he's always going to have a positive view on life and a whole variety of things. He's always going to actually sort of basically put his finger on the pulse of things that you wish to actually purchase on. And I can honestly say, as a direct result of the thoughts and writings of Ed Fortune in the latest edition of the world's longest running magazine of cult entertainment, Starburst, the 2019 TV preview issue, I have already put in my pre-orders for the Garner d'Ozois, or even Garner d'Ozois, History of SF and 35 of the best of the best of the best of the best, and indeed the Firefly. That's the power you've got, Ed Fortune. You can actually convert, you know, random people into genuine purchasers of books.
That's always very nice to hear, and it's absolutely lovely to be back on the radio. It's been a while.
We've missed you, Ed. We have missed you. I mean, it's all very... You've got your own book podcast and various other bits and pieces, but at the end of the day, Ed Fortune and the Midweek Drive, I feel it's just been... We've missed you. I shall leave it at that. Now, in the current edition, not only have we got fantastic reviews, and we will be talking about the Starburst Film Festival. I know, so many good things to go to. Possibly Liverpool. Possibly. We don't know. Maybe they... Who knows what happened? Definitely Sci-Fi Weekender. Ed Fortune is going to be there at Sci-Fi Weekender. Sam Stone has said so.
Apparently, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to being there. Mm-hmm. It should be quite fun. Sheffield as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Big fan of the Flash Gordon movie, so... Yeah.
Gordon's alive!
My goodness, yes. Well, he does milk... Brian Dresser does like to milk that an awful lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So I expect to hear that more than once. I've always disappointed in the Phantom Menace movies that he never turned around and said, "A dive, my fishmen." Because I always thought that would be appropriate as well, but there we go.
Star Wars reference, Ben, you should be all over that.
I was well over that.
Exactly. It's just...
I'm more impressed by Brian Blessed, to be honest.
In there lacked swimwear. That's the whole thing. But I noticed, getting your interview mantle on once again, you were chatting to a certain Neil Gaiman in the latest edition, The End Is Nigh, about the second series, of course, of American Gods.
Indeed. A certain series of American Gods and Good Omens.
And Good Omens, which, thank you.
Which comes out in spring, and I am to understand that it comes out very soon in spring as well. So as soon as spring springs, expect to have a bit of goodness there. And it's David Tennant and it's Michael Sheen. I mean, you know, you can't really beat that.
Eva, David Tennant... And Michael Sheen.
I know.
That's going to be
a treat.
It's going to be a classic way. There are millions upon millions of people who've read the book, Good Omens, and some of the scenes I'm most proud of are the bits they haven't seen yet. I don't know what sound effects are going through Ed Fortune's life at present.
I don't know.
He could be in some railway station in some random part of the world. Where are you, Ed?
I'm currently in Salford, of all places. Having mistimed my dashing from one end of the country to the other. Because, you know, you expect everything to work smoothly with the train. But, yes, very exciting with Good Omens. Really looking forward to it. And one of my favourite books of all time. I think easily one of the favourite books of all time for a lot of people.
Which is great. That, of course, is Good Omens. Have you read it, Abigail? Good Omens.
I have not.
Well, there's something to actually put on the Kindle on your journey back to Canada.
Yes.
Sometime.
Yes. Something great. To get the plane time.
Between March the 15th and March the 16th in Media City, UK, Manchester, just in case you were thinking it might be Manchester somewhere else entirely, we have got the Starburst International Film Festival with special guest Lloyd Kaufman. Yes, from Troma Films. The annual mecca of genre entertainment, culminating in the Starburst Fantasy Awards 2019. I can't believe it's 3 years, I think, since we last connected at a Starburst Film Festival in Manchester, Ed. And look what's happened there.
It does feel like a very long time. So we've got a different director of the event now, Helen, who's been with Starburst for a while, and she's stepped up. And it should be a cracking event. The issue that's about to hit your shelves this week of Starburst has more about the event coming, and also has a feature written by me about all those lovely trauma movies.
Now, you see, you're putting... Ben is very confused at present, because, as we said, we've spoken over the last couple of weeks. We spoke with Robin Pierce, who's joined us again. Hello, Robin, from Castling Waves. It's almost like a Starburst takeover. It's funny. But, Ben, we're thinking about going to see For the Love of Sci-Fi in Liverpool.
Yes.
Possibly.
Potentially, yes.
Assuming there's other... Then, of course, we've got the Sheffield event, which Sam Stone, obviously Stone Tapes, etc. By the way, she's currently heading off to a Doctor Who convention in America with Fraser Hines. She posted pictures on Facebook. She was looking very happy, actually.
Good.
Happy to be leaving the country.
Wouldn't expect any other.
It's a way, Sam Stone's way. And then there's this one, the 50th of the 16th, Media City UK Manchester.
Yes. We just spoil for choice.
What are we going to do? The ultimate celebration of cult entertainment. Can you sell it to us, please, Ed? Or should we just go to starburstfilmfest.co.uk? Or has your mobile phone ended?
Hello.
Yes.
This is the moment there where I was like, as you can probably tell, I am in fact on a train platform. Yes, I can only apologise. As there is in fact a voice in the background telling me everything about the train that I ever possibly need to know.
Nice.
But it's a very exciting time for conventions right now. Don't forget that, of course, that we've got Dublin 2019 coming up in August, which is going to be the closest world con to the United Kingdom for some time. Which is kind of exciting.
And of course, the first science fiction Worldcon, which may be taking place after the possible dealings for Brexit. Strange world, but there we are.
I'm planning on being an island roundabout.
Yeah, I had a feeling you might be saying exactly those particular words. Now, we do know that Robin will be talking a bit more about Alita, Battle Agent, etc. I'll give the name check, because, I mean, let's face it, Eva, you'd be most annoyed if I didn't actually explain what books Ed Fortune had actually sort of convinced me were essential purchases.
They are
James Lovegrove's Firefly, The Magnificent Nine, mm-hmm. with the words from Ed Fortune. We're a little surprised that it's taken the Firefly flat franchise this long to start a tie-in series, but it's looking like it's going to be an unstoppable train of books going forward. Like a train in Manchester, an unstoppable train of books going forward. And the other one was, now I'm always, Ed, how do we actually pronounce the phrase D-O-Z-O-I-S, or the word? Is it Dozois? Is it Dozois? Is it, you know?
I always say Gardner's Dozois.
Dozois.
But I'm probably wrong. I'm terrible with pronunciation. Mm. Almost famously poor. I keep getting the Lou's name wrong for a start.
We've often said Edouard Fortuné has been a classic sort of line from that point of view, so, you know, that's worked well. The very best of the best, 35 years of the year's best science fiction. Sadly, Gardner Dozois, etc., passed away last year, but let's face it, if you're interested in any way, shape or form, I'm looking at you, English undergraduates, graduates-to-be, at the very best of the best, 35 years of the year's best science fiction, you could not go far wrong, could you, Ed?
No, I mean, Gardner was an exceptionally talented editor, above all things. And he always seemed to have nailed the rhythm. I've gone on at length about the entire concept that editors themselves are kind of literary DJs. And one of the things that they're very good at, a very good editor that you'll get, is someone who can rock an anthology and make it work as one coherent experience. David Thomas Moore of Rebellion Publishing is actually one of my favourite editors for anthologies. He did a book recently called Rise of the Beast, which was a series of Dracula stories written from various multiple perspectives. Now, it's nothing that's not been done before, but because he picked the right authors and the right voices, you end up with a unique Dracula experience. The same goes for Margaret Higadotter, who has done the Monster series for Fox Spirit Books. Now, Pacific Monsters won the Brave last year, with the Brave New World Award last year at Starburst Film Festival. The Brave New World Award, by the way, is not going to be given out at this year's Starburst Film Festival. It's instead going to be at Edgelake. So we've got a little bit longer to read all of those books.
And as we've gradually been leaking out gradually, we will have our very own Flash Fiction 250-word competition running with a lead-in to the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 12 moon landing from, indeed, the wonderful world of the University of Lincoln with Adrian Tchaikovsky and the editor of SFX magazine, as judges, and Sam Stone as well, of course. So all's well. I'm sure we need to bring somebody in from Starburst just to offer. It's a bit like, I mean, because it's like, do you upset the Chinese? Do you upset the Russians? Do you invite them both? Oh, Lord.
Just make it a diplomatic event.
I mean, the challenge that Robin Pearce actually has when we ask him at the end of the show this evening to decide who his favourite telephonic contributor has been, when we've put Ed Fortune head to head with
Richard
Edwards.
Slightly awkward, isn't it, I guess? We'll have to just go, yeah, Malcolm Tomlinson or something like that. I don't know. You'll have to be diplomatic.
You've got horse racing. You've got William Coles in Berlin. You've got Ed Fortune on a Manchester train station. Jeffrey Van Dyke could base beat it all from Los Angeles. Who knows?
Maybe we'll just toss it as a tie, perhaps. Flip a coin.
Ed doesn't
It'll
do
have to be a very big coin.
Ed doesn't do ties. He's a winner.
Many sides.
Ed's a winner. You know, literary editor and winner.
That's true.
I have to say good choice on Judge with Adrian Tchaikovsky as well. Absolutely fantastic author, and if you haven't caught Dogs of War, Spotlight's very good, his entire Shadows of the App series are great, but I think one that was missed by a lot of people last year was Dogs of War, and it's just great.
I think it was outstanding. I'm constantly recommending it to my students as an ace line from that. It's and Rex, you go through all manner of emotions with respect to this animal has been humanised, and it's amazing. One for your good self once you've done your creative writing, I think, Bethany. Bethany, you've had a chance to have a little perusal there. Any questions you want to put to Ed Fortune?
Hello. Can we go back to the film festival? Is that okay?
I think we should go back to the film festival.
I'd like to know what sort of audience you're aiming at. Is anyone would enjoy it, do you think?
I think anyone who's enjoyed Starburst magazine will enjoy the set, definitely. It's primarily a film festival, but if you love movies and therefore you like reading Starburst magazine, it's definitely for you.
Fascinated to find in the current edition of Starburst magazine, there's even a review of The Favourite. Who would have thought it? Olivia Colman in The Favourite, reviewed in Starburst magazine.
Richard Fitzwilliams would be all over that.
And if you haven't managed to catch the CNN link with Richard Fitzwilliams, it is an outrageous way in which CNN can mispronounce the name Fitzwilliams in all sorts of ways. I shall say no more, but I must send you the link. It is, quite frankly, outrageous. Abigail, any questions from your good self?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's actually, again, in regards to the film festival. So I know Starburst is mostly a sci-fi magazine, so is it mostly sci-fi films then that will be shown and discussed?
Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and all points geek.
Lovely. I'm a big horror fan, so...
Well, then, I think it's beginning to sort of look as though this could be nudging Liverpool, as it doesn't cross-reference with an open day as well.
Maybe.
Then again, Liverpool, you've got Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher.
My favourite movie of last year, Sif, was James Moran's short Bloodshed, which was about a killer shed.
Nice.
I don't know where you got the inspiration for that from, honestly. I mean, that's fascinating. That's
killer shed as well.
Yeah. That's unique. I mean, that really takes the definition of creative, doesn't it?
That does for sheds what Sharknado did for the shark population. You know, Sharknado 1, 2 and 3. You know, this is sharks in tornadoes.
And people shedding tears.
It's just got the wonderful line where he's obviously bought the wood from a discount from an insane asylum.
Fatal.
That burnt to the ground.
Of course.
Haunted, and then obviously the land was cheap because it was a haunted burial ground, and so on. Yeah. So
it's just like life in Ontario in many ways. So there we are. Or Toronto. I was making an Ontario line. Toronto probably equally as bad in there, but anyways. Eva, would you like to put those last two questions in a sane Lincoln non-psychotic shed eating way to Ed Fortune, please?
I will try. I'm not really sure what a shed eating way would sound like, but
Think of doing a summer stock performance in Saltfleet. Oh, you've already done that. So you know,
I've been there, done that. That's in the past now,
go
Alex. Okay, Ed, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
It's always interesting, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Has it made your commute a little bit easier? I mean, Robin's just sent in a message saying listening to and preparing for a guest spot on the Midweek Drive. You see, Robin knows what time he's going to come in on. He's got that Welsh sort of routine. They just say, when am I on?
Could
Cool.
Wonderful. Yeah. I just wanted to listen to this train and answer there, because this is great. You know. Next question, Eva.
Will we be hearing again from you soon?
I would absolutely love to catch up with you guys sometime very, very soon.
Round of applause, Fred.
And hopefully this time around the trains won't let me down, but there we go.
Exactly. A round of applause for Ed Fortune and the British Transport Service. Fantastic. This is what gives us so much confidence.
Reliably unreliable transport service.
It gives us so much confidence in HS2, you wouldn't believe. Claire Richards, formerly, of course, from The Joys of Steps, and 7 Billion, Souls on the Planet, and so on, taking us around to 5:45, where it is time for the news from Siren. Speechless. Collectively, we are provocateurs, magicians, storytellers, guardians, dreamers, entrepreneurs, liberators, and leaders of the new world. The world is waiting for us, and the time is now. Let's go. Not my words, but the words of our next ace guest on the program from Los Angeles. It's the amazingly wonderful Jeffrey Van Dyke. How are you, Jeffrey?
Doing very well, Alex. Thank you.
Fantastic. Last week we were speaking to Mike Dooley, again, a big friend of this program and a regular from Florida. You're in Los Angeles, and I have to say, jeffreyvandyke.com, what a fantastic website, which opens up a whole heap of goodness from that point of view. And I'll just come to that first statement that's on the website. I believe that business is being used to evolve humanity and that you and I are on the forefront of that evolution. Would you like to share with us, Jeffrey, a little bit about your life story so far?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. You know, my work is largely with entrepreneurs and leaders who know that there's something changing right now, right? And if we look around our world, whether we look at the American political system, what's happening with Brexit, you know, around the world, there's so much of our society, of what we've built, that's starting to fall apart. And it's creating a vacuum for people that see the world differently and can offer a different solution. And I think so often, you know, the people that have been on the outskirts of society, and the intro for your show, right? The magicians, the artists, the people that have often felt like outcasts are actually meant to be the way showers for society.
It's a fascinating insight. We've got four fabulous folk in the studio, Jeffrey. I'll do some introductions now. Ben Lewis, of course, our ace public relations undergraduate, soon to be graduate.
Hi there.
Eva McDonald, who is one of those co-creators and magical singers and folk as well from that point of view. That's Eva. The equally wonderful Abigail LeMay from Canada, but over here sharing some goodness and so on. How are you, Abigail?
Good, thank you.
Also, and we've also got, of course, the wonderful Bethany Gulliver, creator in many ways. I mean, your dissertation is creative writing and so on. So they're all, in a sense, millennials. I know, it's strange for me to actually say that, somebody born back in that they're all meant from that point of view. So let's turn to Ben first and foremost. Ben, have you got any questions you want to put to Jeffrey?
Yeah, certainly. So just as a general overview, I've only just had a very brief look at your website. So I just wanted to understand, do you kind of work mainly with individuals or groups of people, or is it kind of companies, or is it anything like that, or is it kind of on a mass scale?
It's both companies and individuals. So yesterday, for example, I was working with a hotel chain and with the founder of a hotel chain. But later today, I'll be working with a small entrepreneur. So it really depends. But the work is the same, regardless of who I'm working with. One of the things that you might not get from the website is how I work is I look at our life's biggest challenges, you know, what we've gone through in life, our biggest wounds, because they color how we see our world, for one, but they also shape what I call our training program for our life's work. And if I can decode what that training program is for someone, I can help them discern who their training program was designed for. In other words, who needs what you've got? Right? Who is the ideal audience for your work, for your transformation, for the thing you're meant to bring into the world? And given what you've been through, how do you see the world differently that offers a new solution to that audience?
As an international speaker, strategist, guide who works with highly successful leaders, you're at Microsoft, of course, personally designing speaker training systems to help leaders like Peter Jennings, Bill Gates. We've heard of him. He's around from that point of view. Do you think that the future is intrinsically optimistic? Should we be actually have a prognosis saying, actually, despite the fact that you might sort of think it's going crazy with some of the things you already mentioned, actually there's something about the human spirit which will survive and thrive?
I think it's up to us. I don't think there are any guarantees, but I think there's a great opportunity. And especially for people that are called to say, hey, I want to have a hand in changing this world. I see ways to make this better. As the ways we've been functioning start to break down, it creates an opening for those of us that maybe, you know, when I said that the role of the outcast is to be the wayshower, what I mean by that is when we've sat back a little bit, those of us that have been on the outside looking back at society, we have a different vantage point, a different way of perceiving and looking at the problems the world is experiencing. And if we're willing to step forward and say, hey, I feel called, I'm here to be a leader. As you know, in the most recent elections in America, we had a raft of new politicians that have never been politicians before, right? They aren't qualified necessarily, other than they said, I'm willing to. I see the world differently, and I want to bring that to this country as a leader in our government. And I think that that opportunity is opening more and more and more in every sector of society.
Bethany, you know, listening to that, any thoughts from your own perspective?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was reading on the website, and it seems to be quite sort of spiritual as well. And I was just wondering if that changed the sort of clientele that you have. Like, do you find that, like, millennials, say, are more receptive to these ideas, or is it just anyone, really, that's interested?
Millennials, I would say, are inherently more interested in meaning and purpose. When I work with millennials, they tend to not be very interested in just doing work for work's sake. So, you know, that's certainly the case. That said, there's also this point later in life, you might call it the second half of life, where the pushing and the striving that so many leaders have worked with that are in their 50s or even 60s starts to break down. They can't push like that anymore. Their body starts breaking down, their motivation breaks down, often their marriages break down, and that's when they start to open up and go, oh, okay, maybe there's something different. Maybe there's something more. Maybe there's a different way of living my life, and maybe if I change, I can actually contribute in a new way, right? So that audience starts to look at legacy, and that brings them into a more spiritual orientation oftentimes when it comes to their leadership and contribution. So I would say both come to me from a spiritual vantage point, but oftentimes the folks that are a little older come to me after some other way has broken down, whereas when I work with millennials, they come like ready to go. Hey, this is how I want to work in the world.
Ben, does that resonate with you? Are you ready to go? Are you out there?
Well, I am. I'd say as a general overview, I mean, I don't know, a lot of the millennials, I think, I kind of expect rewards, I think, for a lot of work.
Because I know sometimes when we've talked about this, you've got a somewhat jaundiced view about some of your fellow...
I don't know. I think, as a general, I mean...
Present company expected, of course.
Just from people I've ended up, you know, working with, either since coming back to uni or before. I don't know. I think, generally, people expect things more than actually go out and get things. And I feel like something's owed to them as opposed to actually going out to reap the rewards. And I think it feels more rewarding when you go out there to get them and get them rather than expect them and then just be throwing them your way. I don't think it's the same.
How does that resonate with your own observations, Jeffrey? I mean, is that a line that's there that, you know, it's kind of like action and reaction? If you want to actually get something, you've got to put something in.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And I can hear what you're saying, Ben, about millennials. One of the things I think is happened in our society as a whole is we've moved from an honor culture to a victim culture. You know, an honor culture says, my word is my bond, that is willing to put in work for reward. A victim culture says, I'm owed this. I'm owed this, and not because I've done anything, just because I'm owed it. You know, and when we look at media, especially entertainment media, largely it's people talking about how they've been wronged. That's where we get so much media attention. Donald Trump is an expert at speaking to the victimization in this culture in America, and even helping people that aren't inherently victims feel like they're victims, you know, saying, oh, it's hard out there to be a white male in society today, right? So I think that has something to play. There's something at play with millennials in that this is part of the culture you've grown up in. And one of the opportunities, I think, is for millennials, especially, who are willing to say, actually, I'm going to find a deeper purpose for my own life and find a way to express that, whether it's through a corporation, whether it's being an entrepreneur, an artist, whatever it is, and step into that place of leadership in their life. And for those that are really willing to do that, I think they start to stand out in our society and become our future leaders.
Abigail, from the Canadian perspective, is this something where you can say, yes, I can go with that? Or is it a case of those Americans south of the border, they're off on another trial again?
No, I'm going to have to agree with them. I think really it is true that we grew up in sort of a society that makes us think that we deserve things that we haven't really worked for. So I'm agreeing, I guess, with Ben as well. Mm. But yeah, I'd have to agree. I think he is correct in that sense.
Okay. And Eva?
Jeffrey, I actually wanted to ask as well, going back to the beliefs and the purpose issue, do you think it's better to, for millennials and people in general to go through life with a purpose that they think of or with a certain belief and with a plan? Or do you think it's better to go through it like unplanned and sort of
hope for the best.
Ambitious and hope for the best.
Exactly. What the hey, make it up as we go along.
Yeah, what do you think?
I would say yes to both.
Yes to
nice.
Both.
Good answer.
Nice.
The next president of the United States.
Right. So look, the folks that I work with all have a sense of a calling, right? And people that have a sense of a calling will often say, I didn't decide to do this. It chose me, right? I feel like I'm meant to be doing this. And so that's one way to discover a purpose is to feel like you've been called to something. But I don't think everybody walks through life feeling like they have a calling. Other people go in pursuit of purpose. What is my purpose? Why am I here? Right? And move from that place of deep questioning into a sense of purpose. And I think it is valuable to go, okay, this is my purpose. Here's why I'm here. I'm moving towards that. While at the same time going, I'm going to stay open. You know, that place of serendipity and flow. You mentioned Mike Dooley earlier, right? Like Mike talks about that a lot, being open to what's showing up in your life. What are the signs? What are the invitations and the openings? And, you know, I'm 45 and I look back at my life. I could have never guessed, what I've been able to do and what's come into my life. I couldn't have manufactured it. So much of it has come, you know, on some level, I think by no account of my own, other than an openness, a willingness to have stuff show up in my life that I didn't expect. And when it feels aligned, to go after it. So I would say, yes, it is, I think, valuable and helpful to have a sense of purpose and go, okay, I'm moving towards that, while at the same time, staying open in that way.
Fascinating to find the secrets you actually give in terms of your online training. This is obviously how to market the truth out of your work so you attract a tribe of clients you love who really love you too. I mean, that's, in a sense, the ideal business, isn't it? It's the ideal, I mean, some might say, yeah, isn't that capitalism? And we're talking, say, tomorrow morning with Dr. Rainer Zittelmann, who maintains that capitalism is under threat and we need to lose the sort of aspects from that point of view. But the adversity advantage, how understanding your challenges and triumphs makes your marketing work, how to speak your dangerous truth. Are we pursuing this utopian ideal, Jeffrey, or is it just a case of, well, this is what, as human beings, that's what we do. We're evolving. We're kind of realizing that it is a big planet, that there are 7 billion or so of us, and actually we need to get on and work on that basis.
Well, yes. Here's something that's really changed in the marketplace, though, where I believe this is necessary, not just optional. We've democratized broadcast media for the first time in human history, right? Any one of us, starting just a few years ago, 2016, can pull out our iPhones, hop on Facebook Live, and broadcast around the globe. That's never happened before, right? Even YouTube, we'd record and then upload. But now it's real-time broadcasting anywhere, anytime, from anyone in the world. That has never happened in all of humanity.
Just as we're doing at this very moment from a radio studio
exactly.
In Siren, England.
Exactly. So there's a blessing and a curse in that. The blessing is we don't have to have massive budgets to reach our people anymore, right? There's not a limited number of channels that require massive budgets to reach the quote-unquote masses. Instead, we can reach our unique people, our tribe, the people that need to hear our voice, more than somebody else's for their unique situation or problem or need. The challenge is, of course, there are more broadcasters than ever before in all of humanity. So there's more noise in the market. So it requires us to take a stand in a very unique place in the market if we want to stand out and reach our people. I call it the one square inch you can drill a mile deep in the market. And one of the most precise ways I know to discover where that one square inch is to actually look at the adversity advantage. Look at how your wounds and life experiences have honed you and what they've honed you for. So I'll give you just a quick example. I have a guy I worked with not long ago who came to me. He's a consultant in Silicon Valley. He's successful, largely through referrals. He's good at what he does, but he's not particularly differentiated in the marketplace. And he came to me looking for, hey, who are my people? What's the thing I'm here to do for this market? So we looked at his life, and one of the big themes is betrayal. He was given up for adoption early in life. His wife left him for his business partner, right? Betrayal, betrayal, betrayal. So I said, look, that's the landscape you have what I call a life PhD in. You know that landscape intimately because you traversed it over and over and over again. So your executives that you work with are likely to share that pattern. Now, nobody's going to be walking around aware of that. Nobody's going to be looking for an executive consultant specializing in betrayal. So we can't market to it. But we can follow the breadcrumbs to the symptom of that pattern in their business and in their leadership. For him, we said, okay, if you have a betrayal pattern, you don't trust people. If you don't trust people as a CEO, where is that going to cost you? Oh, it's going to cost you if you don't trust your executive team, if you keep them at bay. And if you keep your executive team at bay, then what is the problem? Well, then you're going to be halting innovation. You're going to become the bottleneck. And if you're the bottleneck as a CEO in Silicon Valley, well, then what's the problem? Right? Then you're either going to die or get sold because you can't thrive, right? You halt innovation. So when we position him as an innovation consultant in Silicon Valley for small to mid-sized businesses, and when he is talking with these CEOs, the first thing he says to him or her is, hey, tell me about your executive team. Do you rely on them? Do you trust them? Right? And he's listening for that underlying, I don't trust people, that betrayal pattern, even though he never says those words. So that's what I mean by finding the one square inch in the market that you can drill a mile deep. He'll know and can serve those executives better than anybody else in the market.
I think we've had a mini masterclass in terms of marketing from that point of view. Ben, you'll be listening to that, and your dissertation is on luxury brands and marketing and issues relating to that. Any thoughts or questions?
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, actually. And I was wondering, do you find people... When you do speak to a lot of groups, especially companies, but also individuals, how do you find they react to a lot of the information you're telling them? Do they find it easy to transition onto to make change, or do they sometimes find it quite hard? It's more of a long term solution.
It depends on which side of change we're talking about. If it's the marketing side or the leadership development side. So on the marketing side,
Carry on.
On the marketing side, I actually find that it's quite easy and frankly liberating for them, because when they go through this process, they actually see that they already have everything they need to serve this market, that their life has prepared them to know and serve this group of people unlike anybody else. Oftentimes when people go through this process, they're like, oh my God, everything makes sense now. These people, I know those people. I can serve those people. Like this confidence wells up in them, not because they had to go into another 4 years of schooling or training or something like that, but instead because they've taken what their life has already given them and seen it in service to their market. And so that piece actually is frankly quite liberating. I'll just give you a quick story. I have a guy who is in one of the trainings I led who has an outsourced sales company. So if your company is not big enough to have your own sales team, you can have his company do your sales for you, your phone sales. And he was frankly skeptical in the middle of a training I was running, and you know, raised his hand. He's like, I don't buy it. I'm not getting that. I said, all right, are you willing to play? Can we talk? He said, sure. I said, okay. Tell me about the big wounds. And he goes, well, I was raised in the foster care system in America. I said, okay, great. How did you get by? And he said, well, I never knew how long I would be at a home. So I had to move schools every time I moved from home to home to home. So I learned to build friendships quickly because I never knew how long I'd be someplace. And I said, oh, so you built the skill of building immediate rapport with anyone, anywhere. Helpful in sales? Right? He kind of chuckles. And I said, okay, great. What about the homes? He said, well, I had to learn to read both the written rules for the house, but also the unwritten rules in order to get by. And I said, okay, let's translate that into sales. You partner with organizations and learn to understand and adopt both their written and unwritten value systems such that you become a natural extension of their company, taking their prospects seamlessly into sales conversations where you build immediate rapport with them to turn them into lasting customers. You know, and he was like, I could have never seen that the foster care system is part of why I'm so successful at what I do. And so that's an example of someone where you do this decoding of their life and show it to them in service to their market. They suddenly start to see their market in a new way and see how they have the expertise already built. So that piece, in terms of like, is it easy, is it difficult? Sometimes it's difficult for them to believe me at first until we actually just go through the process. And every single time we see how their life has set them up perfectly and beautifully. On the leadership development side, you know, where they start to see, oh, this wound is still at work in my leadership. I keep people at bay if I have this betrayal pattern. I don't trust people, right? Or a common one for really successful people is that underneath all their success, they have a belief about themselves and a wound around being a failure. And we do two things in response to our wounds. We hide them from ourselves and others, like, don't look underneath the rug. I don't want you to see that in me. And then we go about working hard to prove them to be untrue, right? I'm going to work to be a success. No matter what, I will be a success.
Even if it kills
me. And, of course, even if it kills me. And that drive in the first half of life is oftentimes by the time people come to me, the drive is painful for them, where they see how that incessant need to be a success is, you know, screwing up their marriages and
it's like Jose Mourinho at Manchester United. It's a disaster. You know, sporting mellow.
There you go. There you go. I mean, so that part is oftentimes a bit more difficult for people to look at, and where that does take a little bit more time for me to help them work through that pattern and move from a reactive stance to that wound into acceptance of it, where they're actually free from it and can find a new motivation for their behavior in life towards their purpose.
Jeffrey, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with the good soul. Certainly hats off to Pat Honeyoats and Sheila Jones for helping set up this particular thing.
Absolutely.
Abigail, you've had a listen to Jeffrey talk about a variety of other things. Do you feel as though you're finding your tribe?
Oh, I have to say, I thought I found my tribe, and now as I'm growing, I'm finding my own tribe.
Exactly. Bethany?
Yeah, same really.
Yeah. Eva?
I always think it's like, as Jeffy said, it's important to have half and half. Mm. So have half an idea of what you're doing. And the other half.
Half-minded of what you do, exactly. It's a variety. And Ben?
I completely agree with Eva and Jeffrey. And I think it's very interesting, really, to see how society's always changing and how it has changed. When you do look back 10 years and you think, wow, you know, a lot has changed. And it makes you wonder what...
Social media.
Exactly. But It's things like that that makes you realise actually how quickly society's changing and how things have to adapt over time.
JeffreyVanDyke.com, go-to website for all sorts of things. Jeffrey, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut with us on the Madrid Drive? Has it been okay for you?
It's been great. Thank you so much. And just to be sure people know, my last name does not have an E at the end.
No,
JeffreyVanDyke.com has no E.
If you want to break into a Cockney lining slang sort of thing, say Mary Poppins, or feel free to do that, you know? I deliberately avoided that because I thought, no, it's cliche. I get that all the time.
My grandmother swears that Dick Van Dyke is a third cousin, although I think she's full of it.
Well, you know, it's very positive. So can we prevail upon you to join us again in the near future? Will you come back?
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank
a round
you.
Of applause for Jeffrey Van Dyke, please. Fair to say, Bethany, that you were very, very, very excited when I passed over a copy of issue 310 of SFX magazine to you, because you said all of the Marvel movies are actually in chronological order. You were so excited. You even got your mobile phone out and started taking photographs.
I did. I didn't ever know which order they were in. Well, I just watched them sort of you see, thoughts and got very confused.
That, Richard Edwards, is why SFX magazine, in order of putting the Marvel comic movies from the MC universe into chronological order, you've actually done a social justice. You've done a social... You are saving students' anxiety levels. Bethany, I feel you calmed down just as a direct result of that.
It was a big stress of mine and instantly calm.
I might suggest, from Richard's point of view, maybe you should actually buy the magazine as opposed to taking photographs of it, but what the heck, you know? Yeah, it's getting the word out there, isn't it, Richard?
I didn't hear any of that, so, you know.
Well, let's see.
You bought the copy, though, so it's not like I did it in the shop.
Yeah,
you see, I wouldn't do that. That's a big no.
Might it be interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, a number of times you go into news agency, you say you want to say the words. It's not a library.
It's not a library.
It's not a library. Actually, a few news agents around these days. Most of the things is all online. Let's not bore them, because SFX still has print and digital copies, etc. And Richard, you're back with us today. Superpowered celebration, Captain Marvel. Are we excited? Are we very excited? Or is it a case of, I just don't know?
I think it looks really exciting. I think it looks really good fun. It's set in the 90s. I mean, we've seen that cultural relic that is a blockbuster video.
Yeah.
Remember those?
Yeah. Let's just do a straw poll here, actually. Ben, blockbuster video, does it mean anything?
It's in the shop. Yeah.
Oh.
It does.
Eva?
From my childhood.
Eva, blockbuster?
Yeah, blockbuster from when I was about... Up to 10.
Years old. Did it cross over to Canada?
Yeah, of course. I love Blockbuster.
Oh, well, sadly, many people didn't. That's why it obviously went into administration. Bethany?
Yeah, absolutely. That was great fun.
Could be the last generation who actually can have living memory, oral history of Blockbuster. You know, that's a different... And nothing to do, of course, with the Sweet and Blockbuster, which we might be playing later. Another classic. Bethany, you've had a look through the magazine, as indeed hopefully has Abigail as well. So what questions would you like to put to Richard Edwards about SFX, that awesome edition, which is glossy, smashing, and yeah, I mean, I know we've had Ed Fortune from Starburst, and I know we're going to Robin Pierce, and I know it's going to be a heck of a decision for Robin to decide who's going to be the best telephonic call from this sort of thing. But Bethany, questions for yourself. This could be crucial in Richard's future career, isn't it? Anything else?
Absolutely. I was reading in particular one sort of article on Bandersnatch. I'd love to know what you thought of the Black Mirror special, if you did see it.
Yeah, I thought it was... I won't say it was amazing. I thought it was an amazing piece of execution of a very cool idea. I kind of think it got a little bit tied up towards the end. It was almost too clever and interesting in its own idea. But as a piece of technology and just the sort of idea that you can choose what you do next, that was so exciting. I don't know how much I'd want to watch like that in future, but yeah, I mean, just as a thing.
More like a novelty,
I'm really glad it exists. Yeah.
Just out of interest, in case you're sort of confused, Richard, I have actually tagged you in a photograph with SFX magazine of the whole team. So you have actually been duly tagged in, just in case you're thinking, whoa, why have I been tagged into this photograph of SFX? So you can actually feel as though you're bonded in the studio from that point of view. Abigail, before you have to shortly leave us to go dancing.
All right, well, I was also looking at the Bandersnatch article, and you kind of answered my question. I was just thinking if you thought that sort of choose-your-own-ending style was going to keep up for a while. Do you think there will be different shows that continue that method?
There's already some cartoons that do it. I think there's the Puss in Boots from Shrek, there's some cartoons that do it, and I think they did it before Bandersnatch, and that's not quite as sophisticated. It's very, you know, it doesn't really make that much difference to the overall story. I'm not sure how many people will actually do it, because A, the technology's hard, and you have to film so many more scenes to fill your hour and a half, you need to get a film 6-7 hours worth of TV. So I'm not sure how viable it is. And also, as a writer, you know, the whole point, when you write a book or a TV show or a film, you're telling the audience where to go. But with this, you're kind of giving them the option, and there's so many different things that can come out of the end of it. So I don't know. I think there might be a few, but I don't think it's going to change TV and film forever.
All right, thank you.
I mean, would it be also worthwhile noting at this particular moment in time that if you wanted a legacy for the awesomeness that after 20 years, two English decades, almost as much time as Bethany's actually been on the planet Earth, for once, magic survives explanation. Yes, the penultimate sentence of Nick Setchfield in his personal recollections of cherished science fiction, The Making of Doctor Who. Nick is leaving the sci-fi world and the SF family of SFX magazine, and he's going into the wild blue yonder. But we will always remember him, will we not, Richard?
Oh, we totally will. He's a wonderful, wonderful writer, a very good journalist. So, yeah, and he'll still be around. So, yes, he will
I'll pick up in SFX from time to time.
Proper yeah. Interesting enough that you get a 3-star rating to Doctor Who Resolution, which kind of sums up what most people tended to think it was like. Ian Barrowman's final line that it's impossible not to conclude that 2005 classic Dalek told fundamentally the same story so much better. I'm sure Robert Shearman was delighted about that particular number. And, hey, let's face it, proving that we are finger on the pulse time when it comes to the science fiction undergraduate programme at the University of Lincoln. Who is your science fiction author interview brought to book? It's only the author of Ancillary Justice, Anne Leckie. Yeah, was I not talking about Anne Leckie, page 78? Yay, Anne Leckie, there you are. With the classic line, it's a fairly simple conceit, but it lets me do almost anything I want. Is she talking about the Midweek Drive? No, because she hasn't been on the show as yet, but what the hey. Ben.
Yes.
Questions for Richard.
Yes, so Richard, I know...
Yes, it should be Sir Richard, actually. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know...
So it's really so Richard. I mean, it did come out quite Sir.
It definitely needs knighthood for Richard.
Knighthood.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so just as a general overview, I mean, I'm not too sci-fi savvy, but as a general overview, do you find classic sci-fi more interesting, or do you find sort of more 21st century modern sci-fi? What attracts you more, or what do you find more entertaining to watch?
Ooh, that is a really tricky question. I mean, I'm going to sort of cop out slightly and say I think it really depends what you're watching. I mean, Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, a lot of Star Trek from 20th century is fantastic. I think we're just blessed now, though, that there is so much good stuff. I think, you know, there's so many big sci-fi movies now that look amazing. The effects are fantastic. TV, you know, you've got Game of Thrones, you've got... Doctor Who, you've got Star Trek Discovery. There is just so much, and it's the production values are amazing, and the writing is good, because I think, you know, TV writing has just shot on so much in the last 15-20 years. You know, if you look at what people got away with putting on telly in the 90s, sometimes, you know, Star Trek Voyager, really? And now, you know, so much is good. So I think probably we are living in, certainly in terms of visual, you know, televisuals, stuff, movies, I think we're kind of living in a golden era. I mean, there's obviously lots of great stuff in the past, but now I think we're very, very lucky.
Which is splendid. And that's all we can say. But we have to ask you another little question, Richard, and it's advice, really. It's like this is where he keeps his mantle of being Knight of the Realm, Sir Richard, and also becomes Uncle Richard. Because as we've kind of alluded to over the show, we're on the horns of a cleft stick here, because in March there's a possibility of three events, probably of which we'll only be able to attend two, all science fiction themed. And Richard, they are in no particular order of reference. The For the Love of Sci-Fi event at Liverpool, Comic Con, with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher and so on. There's obviously the awesome Sci-Fi Weekender at Sheffield. Two-parter. Part one in March, part two in October. Which again is Brian Blessed is there from that point of view. And making a late but nevertheless fond insertion into the possibility of location reports. It's the Starburst Film Festival at Media UK City. Now, where would you suggest, Richard, you know, we should conceivably think of heading off to?
Oh, my gosh. Can you do all three?
But, you know, this is it. It's choking. But if we had to do two out of three, which ones would you recommend? You know, would it, you know, Ben needs to know, Eva needs to know, Abigail, Bethany likewise. You know, we need to plan our things, strategies and all sorts of other bits and pieces.
I can't. I mean, you're almost down to toss-up, aren't you? You kind of just have to... If rock, paper, scissors? I don't know.
We might try that, actually. We might try that.
What I would describe it as is a nice problem to have, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's well.
It's a live problem, but I'm sure we'd just find a three-sided coin, wouldn't we?
I was almost getting feeling that Richard was adopting the kind of Theresa May approach, really, such as just take a deal. Just to work with that. It's great stuff.
We'll just drive and find out where we land.
Now you're getting nasty. Yeah.
No. Of course not, Richard. Pass the whole thing. Eva, questions for Richard.
Richard, with the Starburst edition, the most recent one, is there anything that particularly stands out to you, or anything?
Everything, really.
Anything that particularly stands out for yourself?
Oh, I haven't got the issue.
Whenever you have the line, who knew Elastica, Skrulls, Bless you. And photon blasts, it's the Skrulls in the season. They impact on so many ways. Were such a potent combination. The whole range. Even Rhianne Drinkwater, production editor. First time she's ever been mentioned in one of these phone links, so there we are. Enjoyed Bandersnatch. It wasn't perfect, but it was a good go at the concept and enjoyably met her. Meanwhile, she's not happy with Buffy, has been rewatching Buffy, and the Buffy-Angel relationship seems very dodgy now. She's 16. It's not that he's a vampire, it's that he's an adult. Yeah, we live in different times.
Well, yeah.
We live in different times.
So you talk about... Sorry, you were asking me about SFX. Yeah?
Yes.
So what's exciting me most in the issue? I'm quite looking forward to Dead Pixels, the new E4 thing, the E4 show. It's from John Brown, who was one of the writers on Misfits. He's also written for Fresh Meat. And
it's for the players, and gaming is kind of the most meaningful way you can waste your time.
What a wonderful sentiment. But yeah, it's basically about people playing online gaming and giving it a test of it, which actually looks like a lot of fun. His writing is great. It's quite sort of rude and spiky, and I think that could be quite funny. Looking forward to that. Obviously, the Marvel stuff. We've got an interview with Mary Chifo, who plays...
Laurel.
Star Trek, yeah.
Exactly, from Star Trek the Discovery. It's phenomenal. And teasing ahead to another Captain Marvel that we actually see in the next edition. It just gets one darn thing after another of gloriousness. Wednesday the 27th of February. Shazam, it would have been so confusing if he was still called Captain Marvel. Plus the actual Captain Marvel, US, American Gods, 80 years of Batman. I tell you, it's just... I know, Abigail.
No. Batman.
Not the best delivery.
I could have done better than you.
Abigail, you're about to leave us to dance away. Be back in tomorrow morning. Just explain for Richard's benefit what you'll be doing this dancing about, because you've never actually seen the programme in Britain that it's based on.
So I guess what it is we're all, a few of us from the society are going to be...
The dance society.
The dance society. Mm-hmm. Sorry, we're all going to be, I guess, raiding guys or something.
Raiding guys.
They're all coming and we get to decide if we like them or not. And then if the last two girls who like the guy get to do some sort of challenge from...
This sounds too far too.
It's based on take me out. I think that was the dating show. Yeah.
Richard, it's times like this. just be grateful you're not a student. It's a scary world out there. Is all I can say. It's a very, very scary world. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us on the program today, Richard Edwards?
Lovely, thank you.
And would you like to ask him the second question before you leave completely, Abigail LeMay?
Of course. Will we be hearing from you again?
Oh, I hope so.
Exactly. And for those folk who actually couldn't remember, and anybody in the studio remember The Suite and Blockbuster?
No.
No, sorry, Alex.
Richard, do you remember The Suite and Blockbuster?
Well, yeah, you're talking about an original release? I know it, though.
Yeah, we'd hope so. I mean, let's hope Robin Pierce can actually, when he joins us in a few moments, can remember and even sing along with Brian Connolly and the police siren, and all of those exciting things that bring us the very best of times. As we say farewell, Richard, SFX Magazine keeps on keeping on. Bye for now.
More evil than anyone here ever thought. Does anyone
Galaxy. As Jeffrey Van Dyke pointed out, the joys of social media, we're just able to have a little sneak peek of Robin Pierce looking intently at the screen then. How did you define the whole lighting zone, Ben?
It was very well lit, actually.
Very well lit.
Did you turn the lights on after? Is that how you've been for the last sort of hour
2 hours?
Or two?
I'm sitting here in sort of like mood lighting. I've just got my desk lamp on. I'm looking at the computer. I've been listening to the Midweek Drive. And no, I did not sing along to Blockbuster. I could have, but I never can resist joining in with the spoken part. And you know what I'm talking about.
We just haven't got a clue what to do. So...
And that is about as high as my voice goes.
The era of glam rock, which is sadly Midweek Drivers have sort of passed by, unless they were here in a previous life, which they might have been. Eva, you did say you recognised that, of course, and you couldn't believe how close it was to your own performances.
Yeah, no, I did recognise that song. It was creepy when you played that, because I was listening to it earlier.
This is a very creepy song.
Alex knew you were listening to it earlier. I'm sure he found a way.
It's in one of the shows for the company that I work with.
So do they do that as opposed to Ballroom Blitz? Because I would have thought Ballroom Blitz
would
have
done that. That's the next song in the show.
He knows this. He knows this.
He was there.
It's the classic. I suspect because of political correctness, and Robin might have one or two things to say about this as well, Wigwam Bam and Little Willie has gone as well.
I've not seen that one in that yet.
That's after 9 o'clock. That's when it comes on.
I think Wigwam Bam, one of the early hits, and Little Willie likewise. Little Willie wants to go home. Something that's it's very good.
I don't remember that one.
Alex recites it every day,
like a mantra to my guardian angel. Bethany, apart from obviously the Batman T-shirt, which I noticed is classic 1960s Batman in terms of Carmine Infantino, I suspect, with the penguin.
It is a Carmine Infantino cover, yes.
How do you know this stuff?
when I bought that original comic in about 1966, I was fascinated because he appears to be holding his bat shield, but it wasn't.
Indeed.
As the penguin was coming in for an attack...
Yes.
He bravely and resourcefully took the hubcaps off the Batmobile.
Exactly. And utilised that. And that is why Batman is still a number one superhero, despite what Ebony Rudrum, yes, I mean you, Ebony, who constantly would say, she was. It did her head in, did
I
it not, in the
Ebony.
Seminar?
Yeah,
Ebony said,
she didn't like it.
Batman, not a superhero. Not a superhero. I can't believe
the fact that he has no superheroes, superpowers, I'm sorry, makes him the most heroic one of all.
Exactly.
And he's the one person who can kick Superman's behind repeatedly.
Kryptonite. That's the way forward.
Kryptonite gloves.
You know, it gets even more wonderful because one of the most amusing and indeed potentially controversial lines, Robin, was your contributions to Starburst magazine in terms of who's the best Valentine scenario. And I was gutted. I say again, gutted to find that no mention of Edith Keeler and James T. Kirk.
There was. She did make the list, but it didn't make the top 50. However many we had. But that was one that we did vote on. Just didn't make the cut. Yes, it was a top 20. But what I don't understand is, you know, the world's longest magazine of sci-fi and horror, and I've worked for these people for 8 years. Mm. How are George and Mildred in there?
Yeah, that did throw me. I was tempted to put it to Ed, but I thought he's having too much difficulty on the train station in Manchester, so, you know, I thought it'd be too much pain.
He was bravely, bravely live broadcasting in dire situations. Mm. He reminded me of a young Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah, nice cultural reference. I wonder if anybody gets that. Use Google, that's all I will say. It's amazing. Even Jimmy Olsen. Eva, what questions would you like to put to Robin, either about romance in the science fiction world? Eva! Wally! Eva!
I always get that.
and yet you've never seen Wally, have you?
No, I've not, no. Never seen Wally.
You know, these are certain things we need to put right.
Neither have I, actually.
Me neither.
It's just you. Yeah, again. Again.
Sometimes, as the horse might have said. Any questions you'd like to hear? raise?
Yeah, Robin, so with the upcoming festival, Starburst Film Festival, are there any particular highlights that are coming up for you, or anything to look forward to with that?
Meeting the Ludwig Drive team might be a possibility.
I certainly hope I get to meet the Midweek Drive team, because... You know, we speak sometimes on Wednesday nights, and you guys are getting like family to me.
We tag you into our Facebook photographs. I feel as though we should always have a group hug, but no. Step too
I'll
far.
I'll just get my car key.
Exactly.
I'll be there in 7 hours.
Whoa.
I'm looking forward to meeting Lloyd Kaufman and actually having him introduce some of the trauma films. I believe we are showing Toxic Avenger, and I'm not sure, don't hold me to this, we might be showing The Class of Nukem High. I'm also hoping that he will sign my box set of Toxic Avenger. But maybe I just won't let him leave the room until he does.
It's a thought. I do suspect that neither Bethany, Eva, nor indeed Ben have actually accessed the joy of Toxic Avenger, have you?
I haven't, no. I'm very uneducated in this field, I must admit. I'm lucky.
Perhaps you'd like to just expand further on the Avenger who was toxic and nothing to do with Captain America.
Well, he is a very difficult one to explain, isn't he?
Hmm. Okay, let's move on then.
I wasn't prepared for that.
I know.
How on earth do you explain the Toxic Avenger and his appeal and the content of the films and the tone of the films and bearing in mind it's not even 9 o'clock yet?
This is true, yeah. It's like Sharknado. Is good for tornadoes, good for sharks, the rest of the planet.
Indeed.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Have you had any sort of suggestion in terms of where we... Because it's been an all-male connection list as far as telephonic linkies have been concerned. Malcolm Tomlinson, William Coles, Ed Fortune, Jeffrey Van Dyke.
Doesn't happen often, though.
Richard Edwards. No, absolutely. But a bit like last week's Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Again, an all-male production.
Nothing wrong with that.
We stand up for the social justice warriors. No, we don't. Any thoughts in terms of highlights of the show, Robin? These are the times where, as it says on the running order here, Robin Pierce, lead writer, Starburst Magazine, with more perceptive notes and comments on the programme.
I don't know if they're perceptive, though. I think you might be just building me up too much there.
Listen, Robin, given that the Stone Tapes has had to delay its next sort of incarnation and won't be going out until March because we won't be recording until the end of February when Sam and company get back from Los Angeles, or New York, or wherever they are in America, one of the two things, the world needs to talk about this before we even get into Alita Battle Angel.
I enjoyed Ed Fortune. It's always good to talk to Ed. I haven't actually seen Ed since the last Sci-Fi Weekender, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing him at the Starburst Film Festival. Jeffrey Van Dyke, I really enjoyed that, you know. I mean, he succinctly summed up the whole victim culture of today, where things are perceived to be owed and not earned. It's not the world that I was born into, I'm afraid. But Richard Edwards, I would love to sit down and chat with Richard Edwards at some point, because we agree on so many things, including the fact that we are now in some kind of golden age of sci-fi TV, even though, you know, I still like Lost in Space from the 1960s and will not be caught dead.
Danger, danger, anyway. Danger, Will Robinson,
exactly.
Danger.
That was my first sci-fi series, because Will's had a really bad BBC signal in this area. So ITV, because we only had two channels back then, kids, came through clear as a bell, so I was watching more Irwin Allen than Doctor Who.
Stingray, of course.
Stingray.
Classic.
Fireball XL5 gave me my first nightmares as a child. I remember that.
I was a spaceman, the fastest guy alive.
Yep.
I'd fly you through the universe on Fireball XL5. Sorry, I could go on, but...
Now, you know that duet will never, ever be repeated again.
Well,
anywhere.
There's always Eurovision 2020.
Well, unless they give us a lot of money, of course.
Yes, I'm always open for offers, Robin. As life proceeds, I find myself being
if
more...
If the money's good, we can even wear spandex.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
It's a thought. Interesting. Malcolm Tomlinson and Will Coles in Berlin?
Absolutely. again.
Going to be a tough call. But we've got a few moments. We've got a few moments to actually decide. Exactly. So, Alita Battle Angel. Manga, Irresponsible Pictures. You have seen the movie. Is it worth... Because it's not going to be a movie about Richard Fitzwilliams, let's face it.
Absolutely, it's worth it, because I went in thinking, oh, what is all about? I haven't read any manga, I've seen very little anime, and I thought, okay, well, it's Robert Rodriguez. Okay, this could be good. Mm-hmm. So it's based on a manga called Gum. That's the best pronunciation I can give that, because it's G-U-N-N-M. What it means, I don't know. Alita is part human, part cyborg, and she appears to be part anime, because, you know, you've got this anime-looking character with those big eyes that they have, walking around in the 26th century, where the elite live in a giant Asgardian-like cities, all the rubbish is thrown down to Earth, specifically Iron City, where the story's set. Scientist Dr. Dyson Edo, played by Christoph Waltz, who is the particularly nasty Nazi in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious.
Just Inglourious, let's face it.
Yes, just Inglourious. Exactly. Finds a cyborg head with a still functioning brain of a human. So he fixes it up with, you know, some spare body parts, mechanical ones he's got around, and creates Alita, who he names after his deceased daughter. She's curious, headstrong, tries to find her own way in the world, and she's on a quest to find out who she is. And ultimately, on the way, I guess she finds out what it is to be human.
Does this resonate with you, Bethany? I mean, not that you're decomposing.
I'm still trying to find out what it is to be human.
Exactly. I'm thinking about Neuromancer and
yeah,
sort
of
exactly.
Yeah.
I think the highlight for me was the futuristic game that they play in the 26th century called Motorball, and I can only describe it as Rollerball if played by Mortal Kombat characters with chainsaws.
Sounds like
if that doesn't spell it to you, nothing will.
I was going to say, sounds like University of Lincoln Society that's waiting to be actually put together, really.
Perhaps.
No perhaps about it, Ben. No perhaps.
It's better than
there.
Quidditch, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Don't tell Hannah.
Yes, Hannah Brown. Yes. She'll be back with us, I'm sure, before too long.
I'll suffer for that remark.
Of course not. So, thumbs up then. I mean, Eva,
absolutely,
from
yeah.
Robin's description, would you be checking out Alita Battle Angel?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'll give it a watch. It sounds quite interesting. So I always like to try out new genres.
Okay. Ben?
I wouldn't mind it, although with my track list of sci-fi programmes I need to catch up on and watch in general,
I think
there's a lot of homework.
Exactly, yeah. Don't just go where you sort of feel drawn to. That's the important thing.
That's
If you feel Toxic Avengerized, then go Toxic Avengerized. If you feel you want to go, then sub for that.
To be decided.
Remember, James Bond and Gerry Anderson are good hardcore science fiction folk in a world in which Starburst magazine can indeed do a full review on The Favourite with Olivia Colman, which I was going to put to Ed. I thought, what? Is it me? Olivia Colman in The Favourite, nice movie, but were you surprised when you saw that in Starburst magazine?
I've not seen it, Alex, so I can't see that.
We'll have to tell Richard.
I looked at it and I thought, why?
Well, I mean...
But then I thought, okay.
Yeah, I mean, because where do you draw the limit? I mean, surely on that basis alone, we should be looking at, you know, every movie, I mean, you know, that should be actually there. It's just on the basis of it being a movie.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's by the by.
Gordon's our readership base, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm not sure how people who are fans of The Favourite, though, would react to Toxic Avenger on that. I don't know. I'm still shocked. I mean, the bottom line is it's just sour grapes because the Radio Times edition for the 16th, 22nd of February 2019, the 30 greatest radio shows of greatest, the 30, see, I can't even get the word out, you know? It's exactly the 30 greatest radio shows of all time. Do we get a mention? No.
No.
Sorry. Does the Stone Tapes get a mention? No. Does any commercial?
No.
Exactly. It's all BBC complete. And Desert Island Discs comes in at number one. I mean, I know Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, number eight. Okay, fine. I'll go with that. Hancock's Half Hour, number four. The Archers, number two. Round the Horn at three. And The Psychiatrist's Chair at five. And Desert Island Discs with the line, "It's a genius format. It gets to the heart of people." What do we do on a weekly basis? You know, do we not get to the heart of people across the globe?
Surely that is a blatant self-advertising from a corporation that's not supposed to advertise.
I can say no more, obviously. You know,
they're interesting, actually. I've got one question, which which obviously I asked Richard not too long ago. And
is that Fitzwilliams or Richard Edwards?
No, Richard Edwards.
Edwards, right.
So, Robin, if you had a choice, do you prefer classic sci-fi or do you prefer modern-day 21st century sci-fi films? This is. So what do you find most enjoyable to watch?
That is, as Richard said, an excellent question. I think we're living in a golden age of TV sci-fi. We're seeing things on TV nowadays that we wouldn't have even seen at the cinema 5 years ago. But I have a definite weakness and a love, particularly for sci-fi movies of the 1950s.
As we found out.
Particularly Star Trek, is that?
No, they were 1960.
Okay.
In fact, the movies were 1980s.
Definitely 1960s. Star Trek.
But This Island Earth, of course, and War of the Worlds,
Doctor
George
Who's
Past.
Forbidden Planet.
Exactly, except for Forbidden Planet.
Save the Earth, but still them. Terrified
people. Of course, exactly. And Fiona
Another
Moore.
Thing from Another World.
And these are the kind of things, let's not forget The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yep.
These are the kind of things that Eloise would have obviously echoed with had she not been suffering from an ear infection. Get well soon, Eloise! I'm not sure whether an ear infection she can actually listen to the show comfortably, but...
Well, if she likes her 50s sci-fi, then in tribute to Eloise, I will give you a hearty Klaatu Barada Nikto.
Love it. It would have gone straight into the number one slot for our farewell validation. But, of course, given the impending nuptials of Phil Dearness and Lily Holliman, we will be wrapping up in a few moments' time with Happy Wedding Day, Phil and Lily. We'll say the reverse tomorrow just to make sure we've got all genders sorted out on that basis. Tomorrow will be Happy Wedding Day, Lily and Phil. But what is the winner, from your perspective, in Wales with your Carmine Infantino designed Batman T-shirt to the fore, who is going to take the prize of best contributor telephonically to the programme this evening? Malcolm Tomlinson.
Telephonically! You've hoisted me by my own petard because I was going to say Brian Connolly with Blockbuster.
He died a few years ago. Is it Malcolm Tomlinson? Is it William Coles? Is it Ed Fortune? Jeffrey Van Dyke? Richard Edwards? Could vote for yourself, but I don't know how to do that.
Well, no, that's the Donald Trump thing.
And the discussion we have afterwards, you don't want to know where you are. So,
I
sounds very egotistical. Lots of first person singulars there. I mean, honestly,
purely for the fact that he spoke more about TV sci-fi, which is shameful to me. Mm-hmm. What I'm into more than the literary word. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Richard Edwards, I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. Well, relief at last.
Some relief.
Yeah, Richard Edwards rides triumphantly into the distance. Fantastic. Well done. There we are. Marvellous stuff. Which leaves, who do we go to? Bethany, your responsibility of the life. In fact, whatever, you can share it with Eva if you wish. The last two questions for Robin Pierce, please.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, better than reasonable. Yes, I always enjoy talking to you.
And will we be hearing again from you soon?
As soon as the governor gives the word.
Do you know, he's doing so well as Phil Linus' deputy, as Phil is sorting out wedding plans and various other bits of this. I think he's getting better, isn't he, Ben?
Tell Phil that.
I know, but Phil's on tomorrow morning, so, it's all the way through. So we remember what we're going to say as we go out with Swan Song and Dua Lipa. Those final words on the show, it is...
Happy Wedding Day, Phil and
Lily.
Shall we try it again? Yeah, a little bit more sort of, coherence. Yeah, exactly, clear the throat. A one, a two, a three.
Happy Wedding Day, Phil and Lily.
I want to clip this out.
Was it Lily and Phil or Phil and Lily?
I think I need to clip this out for tomorrow. Let's do this one more time.
Happy Wedding Day, Phil and Lily. There we go.